Ladies and gentlemen, I'll go ahead and call to order this hearing of December 27, 2018, in the matter of PLD 2018-00028 and other numbers. My name is Joe Turner. I'm the county's hearings examiner. I'll start with some brief announcements and a summary of the process that will follow. Sir, everyone understands how you can participate in the hearing tonight. I start by saying I am not a county employee. I am licensed as an attorney and trained as a planner. I serve under contract to the Board of Commissioners. I say that so you know you're getting a somewhat independent review of the application before me tonight. My role as a hearings examiner is to conduct public hearings and make decisions about certain land use matters in Clark County. In making those decisions, I am required to apply the county's existing laws. I am not a policymaker. I don't have the authority to vary from or change the laws. If you think that the laws need to be changed, you can work with Planning Commission and Board of Commissioners to do that. But state law requires that this application be judged based on the laws in effect when the application was filed. As a hearings examiner, I'm to provide an unbiased decision maker and believe I am unbiased with regard to this application. I have not had any pre-hearing contact with any of the parties regarding the substance of the application, and I don't have any interest in the subject property or any of the surrounding properties. I have reviewed the materials in the county's case file, including the application materials itself, the comment letters from neighbors, and the staff report. But you have the right to challenge my impartiality, to argue that I'm biased in one way or another, and you can do that when it's your opportunity to testify. Procedure will follow. I'll start by asking staff to summarize their staff report, copies of which are available in the back of the room there. Then the applicant will have an opportunity to present their proposal and respond to the staff report. If anyone else wants to testify in support of the application, they may do so. Then anyone who wants to testify in opposition or with questions or concerns. Once everyone has had an initial opportunity to testify, I'll give staff and the applicant an opportunity to respond to the testimony that was offered. If that response includes any new evidence, I will give everyone a chance to respond to the new evidence. Otherwise, I'll close the public portion of the hearing and announce what I'm going to do. Anyone with an interest in this application may offer relevant oral or written testimony, but testimony should be relevant to the applicable approval criteria which are set out in the staff report. Also, it's important that you make your best case to me. My decisions are final for purposes of the county, but may be appealed to Superior Court. But generally, the court generally will not allow new testimony and evidence on appeal. They'll decide any appeal based on the record before me. So if you feel it's important that myself or any future decision maker knows something about this application, you need to make sure it gets into the record before me. In order to preserve your right to appeal, you or someone expressly representing you must testify orally or in writing before the close of the record. And in order to raise an issue on appeal, someone must have raised that issue before me. If you feel you need more time to prepare, you can ask me to hold the record open or continue the hearing. If I hold the record open, you'll have an opportunity to submit additional written testimony and evidence before I make a decision. If I continue the hearing, we can come back and do this again at a later date. But if anyone wants me to hold the record open or continue the hearing, you must make that request before the close of the hearing tonight and provide some support for why whatever you want to submit during the open record or continuance, why that information couldn't be submitted tonight. When you testify, please come up to the table here. We need to make sure you're on a microphone. Our hearings are recorded. That's part of our record in the event of an appeal. Please begin your testimony by stating your name. Please spell your last name so I get it right. And if you represent someone else, please say so. But unless there's any questions, that concludes my introduction. Take none. Mr. Wiedemer.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Examiner. My name is Scott Wiedemer. I'm the planner with Land Use Planning. This is David Bottomini with Development Engineering. We're going to be discussing the Palmer Valley Estates Cluster Subdivision, which is a rural cluster subdivision in the R5 zoning district. The project included both a SEPA review as well as a forestry permit and a wetland habitat permit. This is our presentation outline. I'll be providing you with an overview and summary of the proposal, identify any major outstanding issues or concerns, and make a recommendation. This is our vicinity map of the project. It's denoted by the black circle southeast of Battleground Lake State Park. Overall, the project is located northwest or northeast of Battleground, and it's across the street, across Palmer Road from Battleground Lake State Park. It's a 36.52 acre parcel, and again, it's in the R5 or Rural 5 zoning district, and it's also hemmed in on the south and I guess it's the southeast edge of the lot by the Chalachi Prairie Railroad, as well as a public walking trail. This is an aerial image of the site. As you can see, it's largely meadow. There's some forestry, some forested sections as well that have been proposed for harvest. This is the proposed plat itself. As you can see, there's seven cluster lots that are shown on the west side of the property, as well as a large 23.34 acre remainder lot. To kind of get down to what a cluster subdivision is, it's a provision of our rural ordinance that of our rural zoning district ordinance that allows for some smaller lots to be created for the purpose of preserving agricultural land, forestry land, and views in open space. In this case, it ends up with a lot 8, which is the large remainder lot, which is also developable in this case. One of the allowances of cluster subdivisions is that there's a density bonus that's granted of 10%. In this case, with it being a 5-acre minimum lot size in the R5 zoning district, the applicants are potentially able to make 8 lots instead of 7 lots that would be typically allowed with 36.5 acres. In this case, with timbering that's going to be incurring on site, largely located in lot 5, 7, and the remainder lot 8. Lots 5 and 7 will be considered converted to residential use, and they don't need to be replanted. Lot 8 will be replanted as one of the goals of the remainder lot is to preserve forest land, so it will be replanted as part of the forestry permit. Access to the site is provided by a proposed rural private road that's going to access all 8 of the parcels. Here's some photos of the site. This is looking towards the southwest from Palmer Road. This is basically the same image, but it's hard to see just across the street. And you can see where the sign's been posted notifying the public that there's a subdivision proposed here. This is a view looking towards the southwest down Palmer Road with the subject parcel to the left. This is a view from the opposite vantage on the southeast side of the parcel, looking towards the northwest across the meadowed land with forested areas to the west, or to the left in this case. And this is a view towards the southwest, looking down the Chalachi Trail with the railroad on the left side. That kind of borders the whole site on the southeast side. The project was submitted on August 15th, the application. It was deemed fully complete on August 4th. Public notice, including SEPA notification, was issued on November 6th, and the staff report and recommendation was issued on December 12th, along with the SEPA determination of non-significance. To this point, no SEPA appeal has been filed. We did receive some public comments on the site. Neighbors to the west of the project, property was owned by the Hungerford Family Trust, and we received a letter from Tim Kent and also from the trust, a letter from the trustees of the Hungerford Family Trust. The issues that were identified were that the site development would be too close to the property boundary, that the cluster lots were too small, and development will adversely impact the value of their property. One of the things that they mentioned in their letter was that development would be allowed within 10 feet of the property line, and that was based on a little bit of miscommunication I had with them and later resolved, but the actual setback is 50 feet for development on that west property line. We also received a comment from the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde Valley of Oregon, and they requested that they be notified if any archaeological resources were discovered on site during the project development. And so that was something that we included as a condition of the permit, or a condition of approval. There weren't many project issues that were that created problems for this project. Critical areas on site were fairly minimal. There was a wetland determination that was completed, and it was determined that there were no wetlands on site. However, during that determination, four snags were identified. That's dead trees that provide habitat, and they must be preserved as part of the, you know, through the site development, and they can't be removed with the timber harvest on site as well. On the southeast side of the property, probably midway down the Chalachi Prairie Trail, there's also an Oregon white oak that overhangs the site, but it's not actually on the site. So they, you know, it's protected, but it's unlikely to be impacted by the project, as that area is going to be part of the remainder lot and likely remain in a similar condition to how it is right now. One area that was identified in the staff report is that the proposed remainder lot is 0.4 acres too small. It's required to be 65% of the site area. And so that's another condition of approval that we recommended, was that they need to, that the remainder lot 8 would need to be increased in size slightly. Additionally, building envelopes will need to be identified. There are two of the snags that were identified are on lot 6. They're close to the property boundary, and in an area of the parcel that's unlikely to be developed. And I can show you a map of that at the end of my presentation here. It's part of the habitat report. And they would just need to be identified to be outside of the building envelopes in this case. And additionally, lot 8 is required to show building envelopes where the site can be developed, for whether it's residential or uses that are part of the, you know, agriculture and forestry on site. But those will need to be identified as well. With cluster lots, we often recommend that the cluster lots also show building envelopes, because for lots similar to their size, they have different setbacks that apply to clusters alone, and it provides a little clarity for future development on site. So that's another aspect of the site that we, as part of the conditions of approval, we recommended that that be included. Overall, we recommend that the hearing examiner approve the project subject to the conditions of approval. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have, and I can show you where some of these critical areas are on site. This is the oak tree, the Oregon white oak that was identified. And these green diamonds denote the snags that were identified. Do you have any questions for me?
I didn't see a condition of approval in the forest permit portion. Regarding the snags, I wondered if they're required as a condition of that, because that is kind of a separate process. They could proceed with that separate from the subdivision. Should there be a condition requiring that they mark or fence or somehow protect those snags during the forestry logging activities?
I discussed that with the county forester, and he indicated that his condition that the project comply with the habitat or the wetland habitat permitting applies to the forestry permit as well.
So there is a condition in the forestry permit that requires they comply with the habitat?
Yeah, I believe it's I think it might be the first condition, actually.
That's a pre-harvest conference.
I have to look it up here.
Condition A10 says critical areas, the activities consistent with WET 2018-38.
That is the condition that he was
referring. Okay, and that's more of a, seems like more of a finding than a condition.
But at the same, from a planning perspective, it's kind of outside. The forestry permit is outside of my review. While it tags along with this project, we could try. You know, this the forestry permit also hasn't been issued. It comes along with this project and with the subdivision approval in general. So it's something that could be subject to change as well.
Okay. I'll look at that issue and the code and whether it gives me the authority to impose that condition or tweak the language of that condition to make it clear about what's required there. On page 7 of the staff report, I didn't see the revised plat. So some of these may go, obviously went away.
The original plat, lot 1 wasn't part of the plat, but there was issues of bisecting the remainder lot.
It changed the location. Yeah, no, yeah. I understood that. That was one of my questions, is I didn't see that in the conditions, but the revised plat addressed it, so that issue went away. I guess my questions are more with the condition D7 on page 26. It says side setbacks for the cluster lots shall be 20 feet, rear setbacks for the cluster lots shall be 50 feet, and front back setbacks shall be a minimum of 50 feet measured from road easement. I didn't see any setbacks for the remainder lot is the first question, and the second question is, and I thought front setbacks were 20 feet, except when abutting when abutting a cluster lot. So look at the right plan here. So lots 4, 6, and 7 appear to allow 20-foot front, unless the county considers abutting that access road, not abutting a cluster lot, and therefore subject to the setback, the greater setback.
We would consider that abutting a cluster lot,
okay,
a remainder lot.
So 1, 2, and 3 are clearly not abutting cluster lots. Lot 5, the majority is abutting. Does that setback change? You know, if you're going down the, I guess, the east boundary of lot 5, where it abuts lot 7, is it 20 feet? And then where it lot 7 goes away, is it become 50 feet?
I'd have to take a look here. I believe that's correct.
Okay. There we go. So the front setback should be 20 feet, unless they're abutting the remainder.
Yes.
And I think I'll need to change that a little bit to clarify what setbacks apply to the remainder lot. The other question is, what is the front of the remainder lot? I understand they're accessing it from the private road rather than Palmer.
That's correct, the west side.
So if the west side is considered the
frontage, yes.
Then does the 20-foot setback apply there because it's fronting on cluster lots? The majority of it is?
Yes, except in the case of agricultural buildings.
Yeah.
This would, again, be clarified with the building envelopes being included on each lot,
mm-hmm,
which should be reviewed during the final platting.
I agree, but if this condition sets out specific setbacks, I want to make sure they're correct.
Okay.
And then my last question was on page 8. What did I ask? Exhibit 6. It looks like I wrote engineering issues, but I don't think that's. Maybe it's early issues. Exhibit 6 said that the proposed Oregon grape, I believe it was, between the trees that they proposed in their buffer may not be tall enough to meet the height and density requirement within 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see a condition addressing that. The Exhibit 6 said they could put in more Oregon grape, or they could specify a specific height or width or a size at planting that would meet that. And but I don't see a condition to that effect.
Okay. Yeah, the landscaping border would be reviewed again for during the final platting, and a mm-hmm botanist would basically submit a confirmation.
The condition requires a plan prepared by a landscape architect, I believe, or something to that effect. And so,
yeah.
Okay, I'll consider whether to put a condition to that effect, but I just wanted to clarify that that still is an issue. Minor one, I think it's, but...
You're right. It hasn't been finalized.
Okay, that was the only questions I had. Thank you. The applicant here represented.
Tom Self, I'm the applicant, and I think we worked with staff. You know, they provide us provided us feedback at the 30-day level, and we made some changes to the design, and I think we're comfortable complying with the conditions of approval. And then based on this discussion, I think, you know, was there a requirement for a pictorial building envelope? I can't remember in here.
For what?
A building envelope.
Yes.
Versus a notation.
I think it said building envelope.
Okay. I think we'd prefer that.
Just on the remainder lot.
It's clearer.
Sure. And the other ones are...
It's not specified in the code whether a building envelope's required on the cluster lots. We often ask for it to provide clarity so that there isn't confusion in the future.
I think it makes it better for everybody if we have that. So we
building envelopes?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Condition D7 says setbacks shall be shown on the final plat in conjunction with building envelopes. It doesn't say cluster or it
right.
just says
right.
all. And if you're okay with that, we'll leave.
Yes. Yes.
Good.
We would just, you know, ask you to approve it as submitted, and maybe changes you've discussed here.
Okay.
That's about it.
Thank you. Does anybody else want to testify in support of this application? Seeing none, does anybody want to testify in opposition or with questions or concerns? Anybody want to say anything at all about this application? Okay. Anything further from staff? With that, I will close the public portion of the hearing, or close the record. Based on the findings in the staff report, this application does or will comply with the approval criteria. So I will approve it subject to the conditions in the staff report with some minor modifications to clarify the setbacks, get the correct setbacks required by the code. I will look at the forest practice code, whether some kind of marking or specifying protection of the snags consistent with the habitat permit. Obviously, that's what the applicant, it's in the applicant's interest to do that to avoid violating the wetland ordinance, but or the critical areas ordinance. But I want to make sure that the condition's clear. And I will tweak the condition regarding the landscaping to clarify, essentially adopt the language that was in the Exhibit 6 that makes sure whatever's planned. The final plans show that it will meet the 3-year height and density standard, I think is how to phrase that. But I will get some better language when I write it up. But that concludes our hearing. I will issue my written decision approving this application within about, it may take me 3 weeks. I will get it out as soon as possible. This is a relatively straightforward one, but I have the holidays ahead of me and also some significant decisions ahead of me in the row. So I will get this out as soon as I can. If you testified orally or in writing or you sign a list in the back of the room there, you'll be sure and receive a copy of my decision when it's issued. But that concludes our hearing.